of William Whitman. Are you there?
Yep. Hi, Mark.
Hey, how you doing? And Professor Val joins us here. Say hi, Val.
Hello.
Okay. All right. So we were just struggling to get streamed, and now we're on the air, so I guess we're going good. Now, I had one of those sort of serendipitous surfing nights about 6-7 days ago, whatever it was, and I found your stuff. And I was standing up at the computer, and I was literally reading it out loud, my Dasani bottle of water here. And to say that it spoke to me, I spoke back. So I was very touched by what you did, because I saw sort of like in a grade school when you have your math textbook and the teacher has the teacher edition with the answers in the back.
Right.
You know, your book had the answers in the back. Just give the folks, your website is called bodyandsoulmentor.com. Give the folks a kind of a 25-word or less description of yourself if you met them on the street. You know, hi, I'm William Whitman, and I... Stumped the band, okay.
Tough question. So basically, the idea is I help people to live a life that they truly love, they wholeheartedly love. And I put the body and soul part in there just to get people thinking in a bigger picture. So that's what I'm dedicated to, and that's what I try and do in my own life. So part of what I'm trying to do is to walk my own talk. And that's clearly where I find my feet of clay. And so part of what you get to deal with when you deal with me is someone who's really clear about all the flaws that I've got, which means that I can help other people, because I know what everyone's going through. We're all humans, and we basically fight the same battles every day.
Now, for those listening to the undercurrents there, that would be called the Eco 101, noticing that humans are imperfect, which only 11% of us can do that naturally, and William is carrying that signature well. So now that you made that distinction so that we're all in the same pool together, because a lot of the gurus out there basically treat the great unwashed like a bunch of dirty clams. And you come to, the altar of Chopra or whatever, and you are cleansed from the trials and tribulations of karmic life, and you wander back out into your little Sufi land and come back in 3 months again to hose you off. How do you make it so that it's an even-Steven situation where there's a sort of a resonant exchange going on between you and the client?
Partly the deal I do when a client comes to me, either in person or over the phone, I continually remember who they really are. So there's two pieces to this question. One is I remember who I really am. So I've got a fairly decent piece of humility because I live inside this thing. I just wrote a short newsletter today. I woke up insane this morning. I was terrified with the recession. I was pretty sure there were no more patients in the world. So I'm pretty clear. I have to fight that stuff too. Mm-hmm. I sat down, did 10 minutes of Byron Katie's kind of work, and got clear. Went for a bike ride, got more clear. So I do the same things. The flip side is. Goes way back to a story my mom told me when I was 9 years old, and it's one of the best gifts that she gave me, which was we were spending summers in Sandy Springs, Maryland, and we kept my money, my savings, which may have been about $20, in the Sandy Springs bank, and it was a Quaker bank. And I was into cops and robbers, all that kind of stuff, and these guards did not carry guns. So obviously I was worried about my money. And I asked Mom, how come they don't have guns? And she said, well, they're Quakers, and they believe there is that of Christ in everyone. And it blew my mind. I totally got it. Oh, well, if it's Christ, you're not going to shoot him, for God's sakes. So I didn't use that language, but that was I just totally got the whole picture. So when my patients walk in, they may have forgotten who they are, but my job is to see the Christ in them or the Buddha in them or the enlightened part in them or the God self inside of them. So that's the other way of being equal. I know that they've got flaws, but I also have to hold in mind the whole time that there's this divine being in my room.
That's tough to do. As you say, if you wake up crazy, I pretty much head home crazy and try to come back sane. And this is one of those things where you get into belief systems with clients. We had somebody a couple weeks ago, actually out in your neck of the woods, I think she was from Oregon, that did a variety of modalities and was much more adept at able, you know, be able to take like the, we call it the lumberjack out there in Oregon. And instead of talking about high, you know, abstract metaphysical stuff, would reduce it down to his world and you know, or interpret it in his world so that it meant something to him. So this is the first mystery question: is why is it so tough for people in general to take care of themselves on all these levels? Is it just that there's no support system for it, or is it just that they wait for the problem because they're kind of conditioned to fix things when they're broken and not kind of, you know, fix the roof while it's sunny out? How do you get around that obstacle?
Well, I think the person you just talked about, she doesn't reduce things down, and you corrected yourself. She basically translates to speak to whoever's in front of her.
Mm-hmm.
And I've got a pretty strong belief that everybody does want to take care of themselves and is doing the best they can. And what they need is, you know, an old psychological term called reframing.
Mm-hmm.
You just need to translate for people, so that they can see it in their own language, in their own terms. And I think good therapists of any sort, or good salesmen of any sort for that matter, learn how to translate and speak to the language of the person they're talking to. Does that make sense?
Yeah, sure, because one of the things, the reason why I was saying, you know, reduce down, because it dealing with an abstract versus a concrete concept, you're going chunking up and chunking down. I was NLP-sizing there, I guess, a little bit. And that's the thing I think that happens with the client, because the client looks out and they see body work and they see therapy. You know, they see surgery and they see drugs. They don't see all the nuances that the practitioner sees where, you know, for example, Professor Val practices Reiki. Now, how do you differentiate that from polarity work or any number of modalities? You do craniosacral work. The client doesn't have the wherewithal or even the vested interest in knowing those distinctions. They just want to experience you, the person, as a practitioner, and they're trying to develop this healing relationship. How do you get out of that alphabet soup, if you will, so that they understand that they're coming there not just because you do this magical therapy, but because you, as a person, are available to them on a level that maybe their average practitioner out there or their conventional practitioner might not be? What makes you distinct in that regard?
Well, I think you nailed it a couple places. I don't get into the alphabet soup in the first place for all the reasons you said. They don't care.
Mm-hmm.
It's only people inside the profession that really care that somebody's doing Reiki or polarity therapy or cranial sacral. The normal person doesn't care. And frankly, I don't either. it's just stuff. What they're coming for, and you said it really clearly, is they come for a relationship. It's the relationship that heals. And, again, that goes back to honoring the patient and then trying to find language that means something to them. I have a pretty strong belief, and it's borne out over 34 years of practice, that I can find language. Most everybody has touched all of those metaphysical places, so it's not chunking up or chunking down so much as changing language.
Mm-hmm.
It's finding the same chunk level, in fact, that's common in their own experience. Ken Kesey, or one of those guys that wrote about lumberjacks, and you read some of that stuff, is, you know, that's true about farmers and other folks. All of those people are deeply connected to nature. You know, they know what's going on. They're probably hunters. And nature is the common doorway for all of us. So nature is a pretty quick way to get into some of these metaphysical concepts.
And you do on your website. Your website has a lot of opportunities. Like, why don't you explain to the folks, on your website you talk about this winter being the season of the zombie. I mean, that might, east of the Rockies, that might be a little weird, but, you know, as we walk around like zombies most of the time. But what does that mean metaphysically? What is it, the message that the winter's trying to give us?
Well, I don't know about the winter so much, but it's just the season of the zombie just came to me because of a session I had with a Zen priest that I work with, and we were basically talking, you either get to be awake, which means, in his conversation and my thinking is present, your eyes are open, or you're in some kind of a story in your head, which means you're a zombie. So you either get to be awake or you're in a zombie. So the season of the zombie is partly winter, but more to the point, it's we have been deluged by stuff that just numbs the brain, and we get caught in stories. I watched a little bit of the inauguration because for obvious reasons, but I don't watch TV, and I just went nuts. These guys talked and babbled inanities for hours. These guys were zombies. You know, they look like they're intelligent, capable, wonderful people, but they're in some kind of a story in their head.
Mm.
They're not being present to the moment. You almost never see that on TV, where someone's really being present.
Yeah, it's actually outlawed in most quarters. You get real TV pretty quick if you actually show up as a human being there. And the thing is, we try to talk about breaking down the fourth wall in conversation,
right,
and things, and to get people to understand that on a visceral level, on a bodily level, in the somatic method. Your approach is you've got a conversational way of doing things, and of course the body work. What do you find is the one that hooks into people's life more directly? Is it more the phone work you do with people and the coaching, or is it more the sort of the nonverbal stuff you're doing on the table, or it's person to person, it varies?
Well, it's person to person and it varies, but as you know, body work, one of the reasons I do body work is it requires me to be present.
Mm-hmm.
You cannot do body work, or I can't do body work at the level I'm doing it, and not be really, really, really present. And what that means is I'm creating an energy field of presence that's pretty big, and the person that's with me on the table or in the room with me also gets pulled into that presence. So they're very much alert, very much there in the room with me. And one of the things, I started as a psychotherapist a million years ago, and I used to take my patients home in my consciousness every day. I was truly nuts. Body work, I'm in such contact with the patient that doesn't happen. There's always closure, there's connection. But one of the things I discovered in touching patients is they can't lie to me, because I know what's going on in their body. I know what's going on in their energy field because I'm touching them. Now, the flip side is equally true, is I can't lie to them either, because they can feel me through those same connections.
Mm.
So there's a level of connectedness and honesty that happens with body work and life coaching, mentoring that happens simultaneously in my practice that really can't be matched anywhere else. I have psychotherapist friends who wish they could touch their patients. But for the way the laws are set up these days, you can't do that.
We've had people, it seems like everybody in the northwest corner of the country is very into this, you know, the body-based psychotherapy and using modalities that involve either sensory-motor integration or just getting the patient to even simple things like doing brain gym exercises, things like that. So it's almost like they're trying to bridge that gap between, you know, the more psychological approaches, the cognitive approaches, and the more somatic or bodily ones. Do you ever think we're going to get that thing hooked up together where we stop dividing it up when you have gym class at school and you sit in the classroom for 6 hours? They separate mental and physical education on an elementary level. I don't know how it would ever change on a therapeutic level.
Boy, that's a nice insight. So that'll get me wrapped up on education, and I won't go that far on that.
Well, we have a show next week on education. We have an author coming on, a book called Alphabet Kids, about this whole generation of kids that have been labeled, and the parents are sitting there going, you know, how do I deal with all these labels these kids are getting? And yeah, these are the kids that are, some of them are mainstream kids, and they're all labeled up. As long as they divide it up that way, to me, they're not acknowledging the intelligence that's there and learning styles and all that. And forget about talking about deficiencies and stuff. To me, there's a big teaching deficit, more so than learning disabilities, that teachers are basically adhering to a curriculum that would go out and broadcast, and elementary school education is narrowcasting. So they, you know, ever since, you know, the old Bluebird Reader and all that stuff, when they stuck in their reading groups, and you know, they really haven't changed their style. Even though they have, you know, massive amounts of evidence to the contrary, they keep teaching it the same way. So what are you going to do?
What I did was start a school.
You did?
Yeah, so that's how I solved that problem.
Oh,
I had
what's your school called?
The school is called Puget Sound Community School.
Oh.
P as in Peter, SCS.org. You can go find it online.
Okay.
I was one of the founding parents of that school because I had a 12-year-old daughter, and there was no way I was going to send her to school. That was just insane. There were certainly other, you know, anyhow.
Yeah, well, they you took steps. I mean, a lot of parents, you know, I have a special needs child. Val's worked in the special needs community, too, but Green Jiminy's up by her. And you just see so many kids getting black-holed in terms of their education because of delays, because they don't fit the norm. And then the kids that are in the mainstream, especially at the fringes of it, are pushed through, and they're pretty much functionally illiterate, and they graduate that way. And how do you – I don't understand how they can justify – that sort of you know, kind of mass marketing of just glossing over all that stuff, because the kid ends up 15, 16, 17 years old not really confident in their ability, knowing more about their weaknesses and their strengths, and that's a real fun way to go through adolescence, just knowing all your holes and your cheese and head out into the world. Go ahead, and you know, we talk about it a lot.
Yeah, it's a tragedy. There's a book that I read called Right Brain Children in a Left Brain World, and one of the things this fellow points out is that there's a continuum between right brain and left brain thinking, you know, and most of us fall somewhere in the middle. But school systems, for some reason, have selected and end up with teachers that are way jammed over on the left-hand side, so they're really the serious left brain thinkers. And most kids aren't there. So the school systems really only work for like 10% of the kids that go there. The rest of the kids fall somewhere else in the spectrum and have vastly different learning styles that don't fit. So a lot of those kids that are labeled, one of my favorite students that I did some mentoring with, I think would have been called ADD or learning disabled, and he's now 21 or 22, I must be maybe 23, and this guy is just a learning giant. I mean, this guy is just a master. And he was lucky because he had parents that got him out of school, put him in Puget Sound Community School. And he's now, you know, I hang out with this guy and listen to every word he says. This guy's a master. And it's not that these people are, you know, they're just differently educated. And, this, you know, they think differently. They approach things differently. So.
Well, they made a big deal out of it over the holidays. Tim Tebow, the quarterback, you know, for Florida, that you know, won the Heisman Trophy last year, and you know, led his team to the championship this year. Homeschool kid, only, you know, kind of walked on a college campus and has sort of taken over the world the last 2 or 3 years. And you know, how many countries he's been to? He's active internationally in all sorts of different cultural ways, and he's just polymath and all these different topics. And he got a world education, and plus he's a world class athlete. So there's a lot of untapped potential the way the system's set up, and you know, hopefully we'll knock a couple of those sacred cows over next week when we meet the author of that book. And you've definitely done some stuff to make some inroads up there, and then you see a lot of progression. You know, out here we got some stuff in Connecticut and things like that have kicked a couple of those walls down to just show people that there's options. I mean, most people walk around with no options, and at least we have a couple of things on the menu now that people can go, you know what, I'm not going to take the government cheese, I'd like a little of that pickle over there, and we'll see where we go. But I want to get back to how you arrived at mentorhood, so to speak, and then when you hit a wall with a client, because every once in a while you're with a client, you're riding along a paved road, and then all of a sudden that resistance shows up, and they start getting lazy, or they start getting a little bit unreliable, a little noncommittal, they don't want to go any deeper, they get a little skeptical about stuff. How do you approach that aspect of caregiving when you're dealing with that, when the relationship is becoming not just resistant, but, you know, a little bit combative of who, you know, we're supposed to be partnering here, and you get that push-pull going on. Do you back off? Do you give them a new set of options? How do you work things?
Well, that is the classic, it depends.
Mm-hmm.
Mostly that, frankly, does not happen with me.
Okay.
So that's a good part. Usually what you're talking about there is fear. And there's
mm-hmm.
ways of playing with fear. One of the simple ways is just to hear the fear. Listen to people's fear. Usually when there are people are getting resistant, it means that I've started running my agenda and I've quit listening to them. And that happens. You know, I've got my agenda and I'm a recovering right person, which means I'm always right and you're wrong. and you know, if I get caught in that, which is one of the places of insanity for me, boy, we're in big trouble. And if I start running that racket on patients, I've got to back up. And usually it starts with an apology.
Mm.
Excuse me, I've been running my agenda. Let me back up and ask you a question or something like that.
Yeah, well, that's the ongoing conversation. And most people that do longitudinal care over time, whether it's body workers or therapists or even educators, there's a certain amount of sort of familiarity breeds contempt, where you get like an old married couple a little bit with clients, where things can be sort of put out in the open, where you don't have to force yourself to take the client deeper. The case goes, you know, sometimes they plateau for a while because they're working out stuff that, you know, maybe is not germane to what you're doing, but something else is happening in their life. A lot of stuff around here, last 6 or 7 years, you know, going through all the way back to the aftermath of 9/11 with, you know, being here in New York and dealing with families and all that stuff. And even in the last 2 or 3 years with families dealing with children in Iraq, and it just, you just see a lot of strain. I just see a lot of people just standing still in the room, and they're so distracted and they're so pulled in many directions. And then of course they're getting squashed. Now we went through I don't know how it affected you guys out west, but when September and October hit around here, you know, I had all these clients that work in a little tip of Manhattan called Wall Street that were coming in here like practically like bottles of Pepto-Bismol, just ready to bubble over. And, you know, you'd look out in the waiting room and you'd see Citibank, Militaybank, you know, all these people just with bullseyes on their back. So how do you deal with that indirect stress that isn't, you know, it's event-related, but it's not like they're coming in going, yeah, I slept funny or I played softball on the weekend. It's not physical, yet it's affecting them physically, and you as a caregiver have no control over those things, yet there they are in the room. Do you drive right at it? Do you just let it kind of sit there in the room and kind of just like dissipate on its own? Do you just kind of play it by ear?
Well, play it by ear always, but
yes.
One of the things that I'm doing with patients over and over again is pointing out the psychological, emotional, energetic weather. And I'll just use the weather as a metaphor. Did you notice it's cloudy today? Did you notice it's sunny? You know how that affects you. Well, pay attention to what's going on. Even me, who I don't watch the news and all that kind of stuff, I had to have someone tell me that Microsoft just did layoffs for the first time in their career,
laid off
lots and lots and lots of people. So we're definitely affected. In case you haven't heard about that nice bank called Washington Mutual,
right?
Which is, you know, I'm looking out at the building right now, across the water here in the bay. Washington Mutual is a big deal here. And of course, Boeing is a fairly major company. So
yes. You guys, I mean, believe me, there's not a square on the chart that hasn't been
That's correct.
It's been hit,
getting everybody.
Yeah, so, and it's also affecting people that practice outside of the third party payer system, like us, as I call it, you know, the shoebox modalities, where people are paying from, you know, they used to call it discretionary income, and now there is no discretion. wrap things up. What?
That's correct.
Yeah, I was gonna say it's always the shoebox is becoming the envelope. So going forward, do you see more people relying on your web-based access to your information rather than the direct care as things become a little more, you know, accessible online and these, you know, these kids walk. I got a 13-year-old walking around with that phone attached to her hip. She's communicating with the world constantly. Or do you see people going back into more traditional healing relationship one-on-one
as
the country gets older?
The answer is yes.
Okay.
Alvin Toffler wrote Future Shock back in the early 70s, and he said one of the trends we're going to see is high-touch, high-tech. And high-tech, despite the earphones in people's heads all the time, we really are isolated. And so people are going to want profound, intimate relationships, and that's what therapy can be, is a profound, intimate relationship. It's not a substitute for others, but we do want deep connection, and we want intimacy, we want reality. And, boy, the Internet is accessible, and if you can get, you know, I've been cranking out videos and podcasts, and I'll link to this talk today, you know, that's great. If people can get access to us in different ways. And they may end up in my table, but, you know, I can see way more people through the Internet than I can see on my table. That's kind of obvious. So I think both are going to happen. I think that Seattle is bodywork central for, the West Coast even.
Right.
We're cranking out thousands of massage therapists and naturopaths and acupuncturists in Seattle specifically. And we're going to see a lot of people wanting that personal care, even if they have to pay for it out of their pocket. And this current financial thing has scared the hell out of everybody, which is also one of the waves that's passing through. We've been in 8 years of sort of constant fear with a fear-mongering administration. And we're now coming into a place of hope, which is a very different energy field. And we're also looking at connecting and supporting each other in a way that has never happened before, or at least in my lifetime. So I'm pretty optimistic about everything.
Yeah, you sound like I said, you've really got sort of your finger on the pulse, so to speak, of the culture, and you've been able to integrate tools that the average body worker would look at from afar and say, that's not me, by getting involved in the Internet and all the writing you do. Like I said, the material up there on bodyandsoulmentor.com, you can get lost up there. And I think you charge about $25 a month to access as a member, right?
That's correct.
Okay. All right, well, you can check that out up there. And just in closing, is there one thing that you would like to communicate to the Blog Talk Radio community here that is a misconception about your work that you can clear up right now ahead of time, so that anyone that's venturing over to your site might misinterpret, so to speak, from their chair.
Well,
about you or your work or anything you do.
I think it's all pretty clear, but one of the things that I'm really just deeply grounded in, if it doesn't work in the real world, I don't teach it. So it's not airy-fairy. It's totally practical stuff. And it's been proven by me and hundreds of other people that this stuff works day to day. So, and that's basically it. It's got to be a day to day process.
Well, you, like I said, you've got a lion's share of information up there. Anyone that wants to spend some time with it, even just reading the quotes up there was amusing to me. What's the speed of dark was the one that stuck out, I think. someone said that. It might have been you.
I wish.
Oh, okay. Well, thanks for joining us up here. Hopefully we'll get our worlds connected online, and our little Soma world will communicate with your funny little Zen guy and the golden mean. I love that logo you got over there. And thanks for sharing with us here. And we know who cares, and it's you. So thanks for joining us here on Soma Time.
Thanks a lot.
Appreciate it. Bye.
Take care now.
See ya.